You're listening to the Whale Scout Podcast with your host, Whitney Neggebauer.
Welcome to the Whale Scout Podcast, everyone. My name is Whitney, and today is February 15th, 2017. We are interviewing Lasana Lahner. She is the executive director and veterinarian at a new organization you might have heard of, SR3 Sea Life Rescue, Rehabilitation, and Research. And she is going to be chatting with us about this new animal wildlife hospital that her and her team are working to establish. But before we do that, I want to remind everyone about a few events coming up. In the spring, every year, we try to do a series of helping out events, and we have two of them scheduled for right now. March 18th, this is a fun one. Canoe your way to planting some trees. This is a really neat thing that came across my email that I had to get involved with. And again, March 18th, and it's on Kenmore Swamp Creek. We're all going to meet at the Kenmore Waterfront Activity Center at 10 a.m., and they are going to provide everyone with life jackets, and there'll be canoes and a Hobie Cat to take you across Swamp Creek to the other side, where we will be planting trees. I believe they had a goal of like 1,200 trees. They've already planted most of them, but there are still more to go. And so hope you can come join us. More information on our Facebook page and at whalescout.org. Also, you'll find there another event on April 1st. It is at Herring's House Park on the Duwamish River from 10 to 2. And this is a really unique park. It's 15 and a half acres, built in 1999 as part of a Superfund cleanup effort. And the area is designated primarily as habitat for juvenile Chinook salmon. Yes, Chinook salmon. These are the ones that all of our beloved killer whales are looking for. So I hope you guys can come on out to these events. It's a lot of fun. Just dress for the weather. It's free. We provide snacks and some coffee. And it's, again, I can't express how important these events are. And a lot of the things that are necessary to recover endangered killer whales in Puget Sound are mundane and they can be overlooked. And that's a shame because it's so easy to do a lot of these things around your house and out in nature. And it just feels really good. It feels good to be outside and get some exercise and hang out with friends. So again, you can check out these events on our Facebook page. You can even subscribe to events near you on our Facebook page, Facebook.com/WhaleScout and at whalescout.org. Stay tuned for two more events in May and June. One of the things we probably won't be able to get to it this year, but next year we're working to put some events together, helping efforts on the Skagit River. And this river is obviously very important for our southern resident killer whales, and huge restoration efforts are taking place to specifically help southern resident killer whales. And so, of course, this is exactly what we've been saying for a long time. And so we're going to help get those efforts underway. Another event you may be interested in is Orca Network's Welcome the Whales Parade and Festival on April 8th. And this event is very fun, family friendly. You make costumes and do crafts in, they usually do it in a church. I'm assuming they're going to do the same thing this year. And then the city of Langley closes down their street and everyone can join the parade down to the waterfront. And of course, it is welcoming the Saratoga gray whales, or as Cascadia Research Collective likes to call them, the Sounders. And without further ado, I'd like to welcome to the show Lasana Lahner. We are back here on the Whale Scout Podcast with Dr. Lasana Lahner, and she is going to talk to us a little bit today about SR3, a newer organization, relatively speaking, to the Puget Sound region. Hi, how are you doing?
Good, how are you? Thank you so much for having me, Whitney.
Great, thank you so much for joining us. Tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into working with whales and other wildlife in Puget Sound.
Yeah, so actually, kind of oddly enough, I grew up in Minnesota, and there aren't many whales out there, but I've always been fascinated by wildlife since I was quite young, and knew that I wanted to be a veterinarian since I was quite young, too. So those two things came together, and my first job out of veterinary school was actually working at the Lincoln Park Zoo in Chicago, and my focus there was on rabies eradication and wildlife conservation in Africa. From there, I came to the Seattle area, and I worked for 5 years as the staff veterinarian for the Seattle Aquarium, and then just recently left that position to start a new organization called SR3, Sea Life Response, Rehab, and Research, which is dedicated to filling a gap up here in the Pacific Northwest that responds to injured or stranded marine mammals, as well as support ongoing population health studies, so that's where orcas come in. And we're also collaborative with UW and other research and teaching institutions.
So you mentioned this wildlife hospital, and there's a gap in this region. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, so in other regions, so like Alaska or north of us, directly north of us in British Columbia or in the south, California, and then along all of the east coast of the United States, when a marine mammal is stranded or injured on the beach, we're able to bring it in those other regions and do a health assessment and determine whether the animal should be rehabilitated or not. Here in the Pacific Northwest, in Washington, we're really limited in that respect. There is no facility dedicated to marine mammals. PAWS does an amazing job in Linwood. They have a wildlife rehabilitation center there, and they do a great job taking harbor seal pups every year. But we get a lot more pups than they can handle every year. So there's a need to expand our capacity for not only harbor seals, but also animals that we don't have a facility for right now, such as Guadalupe fur seals or any adult seal or sea lion, some of those little cuties that are hard to spot but do strand quite frequently and are stranding in increasing numbers in the Pacific Northwest, the harbor porpoise.
And so if I understand this correctly, and I've heard this from other people, that the current protocols, if you see a stranded or orphaned harbor seal, is to let nature take its course. Is that true? And how would your hospital change that?
Yeah, in a lot of ways, it is true. NOAA and WDFW both do a really good job trying to assess the situation with each individual animal and figure out whether the kind of approach of letting nature take its course is the right approach. If it seems like a dire situation where the animal is really uncomfortable and is suffering, they may call me in, as well as our veterinary nurse, Casey McLean, to actually euthanize the animal so that it doesn't suffer. So recently, there was an adult male Steller sea lion who had stranded in Port Angeles, and he had been on the beach for over a week, and he was obviously quite ill and not improving. And so, you know, the agencies decided it was better to euthanize that guy. And so that's an example of where in other regions, they may be able to bring animals in and rehabilitate them, or at least perform what we call a complete health examination. And so that is where we get all sorts of data on the animal as to why it may have stranded. And it's a valuable thing to do while they're alive before you euthanize them. And it's something you can only do really with a hospital, a marine animal hospital, where you can hook up monitors, take samples, anesthetize the animal, and then decide whether it's a good candidate for rehabilitation. So, for example, you might have an adult harbor seal, and you anesthetize it, and you take a radiograph or an x-ray, and you see that it's got all sorts of broken ribs and bullets in its chest because it's been shot or it's been hit by a boat. In cases like that, you may try to help the animal, but if it's too severe, you may decide that it's in too much pain and euthanize. So that's just an example of where we may be able to help animals in the future.
And so a lot of our volunteers are curious, how would your organization, and you're working on obtaining a building, I guess is what I'm trying to get at.
Yeah.
How would that change the protocols that exist in calling different stranding networks? You know, would those numbers and regions change at all?
Well, we've been working very closely with NOAA on this process, and the first thing I want to say is that the rehabilitation policy for the region will not change, but that we may be able to help more animals. And certainly in situations like there was a Steller sea lion that stranded, I think, 2 years ago, and he had to be sent down to the Marine Mammal Center in California. There was also a Guadalupe fur seal. There's been quite a few. And then we've also maxed out our space for stranded sea turtles several times now. So in all those cases, with a new facility, we'll be able to take those animals up here. We'll have more space for those animals. and we'll be able to do a lot more rehabilitation. And when the goal of rehabilitation is really to learn about the populations and do surveillance, unless it's an endangered species, and then in that case, it is to actually help the population numbers.
And how far off are you from obtaining a space and being able to open your doors to these animals?
Well, it's a long process, I've learned as a veterinarian. There's a lot of permitting that's involved. And there's not, you know, Seattle is a bustling city, so finding a space that's in Seattle that's available for a center like this has definitely been challenging, but it's been our primary goal for the last 4 months since we first started. And we're honing in on a couple different spots, and we hope to make an announcement, you know, in the next 2 to 3 months about those a potential site that will work out. So we're getting closer, and, you know, it's also... We have a wonderful angel donor, but that person, you know, she's covering our operating expenses. So we do need support for the capital costs, such as building the new facility. So it always helps to get any donations possible to help for the cost of the facility.
So what would happen in the case that there was some marine mammal that was brought into your care that was not able to be released?
Yeah, that is a great question. So it really depends on the species, but ultimately that decision would be up to the agencies that oversee the rehabilitation centers, such as NOAA or U.S. Fish and Wildlife. In general, our goal is always to get animals back out into the wild where they came from. Many other institutions will take a few animals each year that may not be releasable back to the wild and potentially place them in accredited zoos or aquariums. But that is something that we would take guidance on from NOAA and U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
And I'll ask a follow-up question here. What Great. Sort of institutions in this area might take a sea lion or a seal pup?
Yeah, that is a great question. So institutions in this area that might take a sea lion or a seal pup include places like the Seattle Aquarium or the Point Defiance Zoo or Aquarium. So actually taking animals from rehabilitation centers that can't be released back into the wild is a great way for those institutions to maintain marine mammals in their care that are wonderful ambassadors for marine conservation. So that is an option for those centers.
And one of the most critically endangered species that we have in this area are the southern resident killer whales. Is there a scenario where your facility could come in and help, say if there was a young animal that was live stranded or something like that?
Well, yeah, we definitely, so I'm listed as a veterinarian to help with any live stranded southern resident killer whales. And the goal there would be to try to assess the animal, do a medical examination, make the animal comfortable. So is it stressed out? We'll give it some medications to help relax the animal because that's a very stressful situation. And then we try to figure out how to get it back in the water because we don't have any pools in this area where we could even rehabilitate such a large critter. And we definitely would not be ever taking any SRKW into captivity. So, you know, we definitely will be helping in any way we can. And then we also have a research branch of our organization. So Dr. Holly Fernbach, who is an SRKW researcher, is an SR3 employee. And so she is a pioneer with the drones that collect the blow samples and look at microbiome. But she's also doing all the photogrammetry work to look at the body condition scores. And that's a collaborative project with a bunch of different agencies, including the Vancouver Aquarium Marine Science Center and Lance Burnt Leonard. And NOAA. So we're doing a lot of research to try to figure out what's going on with their health in the wild before they strand. But yes, we will definitely be there in the event of a stranding response.
And a lot of our volunteers have to know, you know, will you be needing volunteers and what sort of opportunities will exist to get some volunteers in the action?
Yeah, totally. So we have definitely need volunteers. So, you know, both for education events, but also, you know, once we have a hospital going, we will need volunteers in high numbers to help, you know, with feeding the animals, caring for the animals. And, you know, of course, these are going to be mostly pinnipeds, seals, and sea lions. But, of course, occasionally a harbor porpoise or other small cetacean will come through the facility for all those cetacean lovers. But yeah, we will need volunteers for a variety of things and really welcome anyone who would like to volunteer with our organization. There is a space on our website, clifr3.org, where you can sign up for our newsletter and sign up to volunteer as well.
I just read an article in the last couple of weeks about these ecosystem interactions where people are trying to understand what may be limiting salmon recovery. And one thing that they were studying is harbor seals and all of the harbor seals eating large amounts of salmon. And the research has not gone so far to say that they should be culled or killed. But you know, what if someone might point out that research to you, what would your response be about saving these seals?
Totally. Well, I love that question. So that paper did, it's a really well done paper, first of all. And they used some very advanced mathematical modeling to try to figure out how much salmon do harbor seals eat. And in fact, they eat a lot. So they eat probably 1.4 million pounds of salmon, likely mostly juvenile Chinook, every year. The southern residents probably eat 1.2. So they eat more than the southern residents. That's a lot. But why are they eating this? So that's the best question to ask. And seals and sea lions don't prefer salmon. So we know that in years when forage fish numbers are high, herring and anchovies, seals and sea lions eat very little to no salmon. And so the fact that they're eating salmon actually represents a disruption in our food web and a problem with our forage fish recovery. So we know forage fish numbers have been plummeting and are a huge concern, but because we're less concerned about going out for a fancy meal of anchovies, I think that it's getting less attention that our forage fish numbers have crashed. But I think this is a really good example of a food web interaction where if we're able to bring our forage fish numbers back up, those harbor seals and those sea lions are going to be eating the forage fish. And all that salmon that they were eating is going to be available for the southern resident killer whales. So it's really one of those things of looking at the food web itself, realizing that harbor seals and sea lions are important native wildlife species here in this region, and taking the picture very holistically.
Yeah, that's a fascinating thing to bring up. And it's also a free little plug for our friends over at Sound Action who have been, you know, telling everyone about this connection between killer whale salmon and forage fish for a long time. So I find it just really interesting to bring that up. And from my understanding is that a lot of the forage fish populations in Puget Sound are not very well understood. Is that true?
It is true. Yeah. I mean, we've been able to document declines, but people are kind of struggling to figure out what the cause is. There's been a lot of focus on habitat loss, but then recently there was some papers that showed that the eelgrass beds and other areas that these animals rely on haven't declined in connection with their populations. And so then we have to look at the issue of commercial fisheries and other impacts on these fish. But, you know, honestly, it isn't that well understood. It's not that well studied. And I think it's something that needs a lot of attention because it's intricately tied with our salmon numbers. Not just that they're in the same environments in a lot of cases and so affecting the salmon too, but as you can see, a hungry harbor seal or sea lion, which is a generalist predator, is going to eat what's available. And so it's going to eat salmon that it wouldn't usually eat. And whereas a specialist predator, like a southern resident killer whale, it really only eats, you know, a narrow list of items. And so being able to keep those items for the southern residents is important and providing other food for the seals and sea lions.
It's all very fascinating. If people want to help get your organization moving and open, what can they do to help you in the near future?
Well, I mean, I think our biggest thing is kind of what you're doing is raising awareness about southern resident killer whales. That's really the most important thing to us and to our organization. We're very focused, of course, on response to other critters. But with the southern resident killer whale population dwindling to 78 animals, what I tell most people is, like, get the word out. Talk about this. Eat, make good food choices, and, you know, volunteer for local organizations that are trying to make a difference, like Sound Action, like Whale Scout, like SR3. And then if you have the ability to open your checkbook, you know, make a donation to these organizations as well. But there's a lot of things you can do to help out, you know, if you can't donate. So, Yeah, but the whales, I think, are the most critical thing we're facing right now.
And where can people go to learn more and to donate?
Yeah, so our website, SeaLifeR3.org. On the top right side, you'll see information on getting involved and also the ability to donate. And you can learn more about our organization and what we're up to as well. So we love people staying in touch, signing up for our newsletter, checking out our blog. And you can also check us out on Facebook, which is facebook.com/SeaLifeR3, and stay up to date. And we actually just recently posted a response to that seal and sea lion paper and people's concerns about, you know, the seals and sea lions eating all the fish. So we like to stay up on current events and provide people with information on the whole picture.
That's fabulous. And I'll link to that in the show notes on this podcast that you can find at whalescout.org. Is there anything else that you want to share with us?
No, just we really appreciate you guys reaching out and being such a collaborative institution. We think that what you're doing is amazing and look forward to working with you guys more in the future to help improve the situation for wildlife here in Washington.
Well, thank you very much. And we look forward to talking with you again and possibly celebrating a grand opening in the near future.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Hope so.
Well, thank you very much. Thanks again, everyone, for listening. And I just want to invite all of you to go to our Facebook page and kind of scan by there every once in a while. We ask for questions for guests, and I want to thank everyone for asking questions for today's guest. And please, if you like this podcast, subscribe on iTunes, and you can find show notes that we talked about with our guest today on our website, whalescout.org, in the podcast section. And if you like this podcast a lot, you can go up there and send us a donation. Your money helps us keep this going and helps create programs for the future. Thank you. Namaste.
Thank you for listening to the Whale Scout podcast. Your voluntary donation goes toward the recovery of whale species and enhanced whale watching opportunities in the Pacific Northwest. Please visit www.whalescout.org for more information.